The Royal Desserts Program, directed by Rudy Valley. Tonight's star, Ethel Barrymore. Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and company. The American stage, which is considerably closer at hand here in New York, sends us tonight its first lady. Miss Barrymore will be heard in an episode from her new hit, White Oaks, dramatized from the famous novel. Our company includes as well
Tom Howard and George Shelton,
old friends in a new budget of bickering and bombast, bicker and better than ever.
Irving Caesar,
that sweet singer of safety. Be sure your children hear Irving's song tonight.
Tommy Riggs.
And Betty Lou, who believes that little girls should be heard, but not seen.
Graciela Parraga.
Official ambassadress of song from the Cuban government. Now at the Club La Rue, New York. And a novelty act, the nature of which we shall for the moment conceal. Except to say that it utilizes the talents of three celebrated announcers. Milton Cross, Ben Grauer, and
Graham McNamee. Thank you.
Picture, Fools for Scandal. The song, How Can You Forget? The writers, Rogers and Hart.
How can you forget when you lie awake and dream at night? How can you forget when your heart is a mosquito bite? When the drops of rain that fall say patter, patter once again. Don't let her leave you, says the postman there. How can you forget? Ring a ring a ring, says the phone. You can win her yet, bring her back alone. Fish were meant to fry, and you're in the net. Till the day you die, lover, how can you forget?
Of this program, meet two old friends of yours, Tom Howard and George Shelton.
Thank you. Hiya there, George. Boy, you know, it's good to see you again, George. Say, by the way, how long has it been since I've seen you, George? How long would you say at a rough estimate?
Well, wait now, let me see.
Now. Oh, now, wait a minute. It's been longer than that, George. Well, now, wait, sure, I can recall. How do you feel, George? How do you feel? You know, you don't look so good, I'm happy to say.
All
how do you
right.
feel, George?
Well, Tom, I tell you, I don't feel so hot.
No?
No, sir. I'm aching from neuritis.
Well, I'm glad to know you. I'm Howard from New Jersey, George. I'm very glad to
well,
know
say,
you.
Well, say, wait for a minute, Tom. Did you say hello to Rudy?
Yeah, what? Rudy who?
Rudy who? Why, Rudy Valley.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's on this program, too, isn't
yes,
he, George?
Yes, he is. And say, Tom,
yeah.
Look, Tom, there's Graham over there.
Over where?
Over
oh,
there.
Yeah, I thought that was a bass fiddle. Oh,
no,
that's Graham,
no.
Yeah.
Good old Graham.
Yeah.
Say, he looks great, doesn't he, Tom?
He sure does. Hello there, Graham. How are you, Graham?
Well, Tom, I've just got over a slight cold, and I'm a little weak in the knees.
Well, you should be carrying that stomach around,
Graham. No, Tom, wait a minute. My waistline's not so large anymore.
Well, I'd hate to knit you a girdle in a hurry, Graham.
Wait for a minute. Don't mind him, Graham. He needs a brain specialist.
You mean he needs a brain.
Oh, nice work, Graham. So you thought you were funny, Mr. Howard?
He's as funny as a mouthful of gold teeth.
What do you mean, Graham? You mean I'm bright and sparkly?
Nope, just a flash in the pan.
Just a flash? Wait a minute. Say, what is this? Say, George, he's getting more laughs than we are.
Well, that's natural. He's been working with comedians.
Oh, yeah.
Anyhow, Tom, we're glad to have you on the program again.
I know you are, Graham. Now the program will get someplace.
Oh, no, just a minute, Mr. Bernard Shaw. Yes. You see, Tom, there you go, getting yourself disliked again.
Have you seen Rudy yet, fellas?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I want to welcome Rudy back to New York.
Welcome him back? Why, he's been back for several weeks now.
Yeah, how's it we haven't been on the program sooner then? How's that?
Well,
happen?
I don't know, Tom.
Huh?
But you wouldn't have been on the program now if they weren't stuck for an act.
Oh, yeah? Ooh. Well, maybe they're still stuck.
Here's Rudy now.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Rudy. Hello, boy. You know, Rudy, I was just telling Graham here how glad we are to have you on the program with us again.
Thanks, Tom. I'm glad to see you boys again.
We sure missed you, Rudy.
Yeah, we sure did. We sure did, Rudy.
Thanks, George.
So, you know, you look good, too.
Yes, he sure does, Rudy. I think he looks fine. Rudy looks great. He's got that nice tan. He looks marvelous. How do you think George looks, Rudy?
Oh, I think George looks fine.
Yeah, look at him. He's got those muscular bags under his eyes there.
Wait,
what have you boys been doing with yourselves?
Well, Rudy, after our last program, we took a little vacation.
Where'd you go?
Well, Tom wandered down to Florida.
Where did you wander, George?
Well, he took a Scotch vacation, Rudy.
Scotch vacation?
Yeah, he stayed at home and let his mind wander.
Say, yeah. You haven't been doing so bad yourself, Rudy. You've been commuting between New York and Florida, haven't you?
Yes, George, we've been kind of hopping back and forth.
Hopping back? Boy, that's some hopping, if you ask me.
It sure kept you busy, though.
Well, it's his own fault. If he'd save his money, he wouldn't have to do it.
Well, Rudy, the way you jump around, you sure are in demand, aren't you?
Well, I suppose I've been rather lucky.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. It takes a lot of hard work, too. Say, by the way, what sign were you born under, Rudy?
Taurus, the bull.
Why?
It was shady there.
It was shady.
Boy, you walked right into that one, Tom.
Yes, sir. I wish I had a thought of that one.
Say, I was born under Leo the Lion.
What sign were you born under, Tom?
Donald the Duck.
Too bad I didn't see you in Florida, Tom. You know, I'd have taken you fishing with me.
Oh, you'd have needed better bait than that, Rudy.
Oh, yeah? Say, you know, Rudy, I'm surprised. I didn't think you would recognize me, you know. After all, it's been so long since you've seen me, you know.
Well, tell you the truth, I didn't at first, if it hadn't been for your suit.
Yeah, the suit get... Oh, wait a minute now.
Tom doesn't change much.
Maybe he has to save his money.
Maybe Say, now, wait a minute. This is going too far. Are you fellas trying to infer that I don't spend any money?
No, but they do say that you have the first dollar you ever earned.
He's not only got the first dollar he ever earned, but he's got the guy's right hand that gave it to him, Rudy.
Oh, yeah? Now, I suppose that's funny,
huh? Well, what's the matter? Did it lay an egg?
Laid an egg? It laid an angel cake. That's 13 eggs.
No, don't fight, boys. You've got a good act.
Oh, we're just kidding, Rudy. You see, Tom and I are really pals.
What do you mean, pals?
Well, after all, Tom, you know what I think of you.
Yeah, I don't like you either.
No. Wait a minute, Tom. George likes you. We all like you.
Yeah?
Well, you know, the boys and I were talking the other night.
Hey, what boys, Rudy?
The boys in the band.
Do the boys like Tom, too?
Right?
Yes, I am,
right? I don't see how that bunch could like anyone, Rudy. Yes.
No? Well, I'll show you. Say, boys, who's the nicest fellow we ever had on this program?
Tom Howard.
Who's the most lovable?
Tom Howard.
And who is the most human?
Tom Howard.
Who's the best comedian on the air?
Charlie McCarthy.
There you are, Tom.
Yeah, there I am, Rudy.
By the way, boys, I'd like to have you meet Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou.
Oh, certainly, Rudy.
Yeah, we'd love to meet them, Rudy.
Tommy, this is Tom Howard and George Sheldon.
Mr. Howard and Mr. Sheldon, this is a pleasure.
Will you introduce them to Betty Lou, Tommy?
I'd be glad to. Betty Lou, I want you to meet Tom Howard and George Sheldon.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Hyde, Mr. Sheldon.
Wait a minute. What was that, George? Where'd that come from? Now, wait a minute. Am I hearing things? I know I'm not seeing them here, George. What is it, termites or something? What is it?
That was Betty Lou, Tom.
I didn't see her. Why don't you come out in the open so I can see her here?
See, Tom, Betty is only a little girl, Tom.
I'll say she's little. She's so small I can't even see her, if you ask me.
I can see you, Mr. Howard.
Isn't that cute, though, huh?
Well, you mean you can see her, too?
Yeah.
Boy, I need glasses.
I think you've had too many glasses.
Oh,
don't you know, Tom, that Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou are one and the same person?
Oh, I get it. He talks like a little girl.
That's it.
He's got a bifocal voice.
Yeah, bifocal.
Yeah.
Well, Betty, I think you'd better say goodnight to Mr. Howard and Mr. Sheldon.
Good night, Mr. Howard and Mr. Sheldon, too.
Gosh, you know that. That's really.
Boy, that's clever, Tom, isn't
yes,
it?
Sir. Yes.
No, that was cute. You know,
certainly
you know,
was.
I would hate to hear Betty Lou if Tommy Riggs ever got laryngitis. You know that, George? You know, wait a minute. That gives me an idea, George.
What's that?
You know, I'm going to have a little girl. You know that?
What do you mean?
Yeah, I won't need you anymore for straight man.
Oh, wait now. You mean that you can do what Tommy Riggs does?
Oh, sure. It's a sin. You know what? I'm going to call my little girl Mary Jane.
Oh, this is going to be good.
You said it. Mary Jane, I want you to meet my old partner, George Sheldon.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Sheldon, and everything, too, don't you?
Don't I what?
Don't you like my curls?
How do you like that, George?
Boy, that was terrible.
I thought so. I better swallow Mary Jane.
Good night.
Don't you agree, now the spring is here, the women are looking for desserts that are extra easy to prepare?
Why, of course we are. Nobody wants to spend a lot of time in a hot kitchen these nice days.
Certainly not. So don't forget, one of the easiest desserts in the world to make is royal chocolate pudding.
Well, naturally, it's all cooked.
Hawaii, an Hawaiian watch ant. We're honored to present Miss Ethel Barrymore, who adds new laurels to an illustrious name in the season's newest hit, White Oaks. The play, based on the best-selling novel, White Oaks of Jalna, has been running for almost exactly 2 years in London. In the New York production just begun, Miss Barrymore shares honors with one of the most expert of Britain's younger leading men, Stephen Haggard. Mr. Haggard is with us this evening. By arrangement with Victor Payne Jennings, London and New York producer, we present Ethel Barrymore and Stephen Haggard in White Oaks. Miss Barrymore plays Adeline, matriarch of the large and lusty White Oak family. Aged 101 years, but still as lusty as any of her tribe. Scene, the living room of the White Oaks house in Canada. It is late at night. The big room is in darkness. A nightlight still burns in old Adeline's bedroom to the right. The French windows in the living room open slowly, and Finch, her grandchild, a sensitive youth of 18, enters. The grandmother hears him cross the room. She speaks.
Who's there? Who's there?
Want anything, Gran?
Oh, it's you, Finch.
Yes, it's me.
I want to get up.
Shall I call someone?
No, no, you'll do. Come along and help me.
But, Gran, do you think you should get up at this hour?
I like the night. I like to be up in it. I feel young in the night. Light that lamp.
Someone might see it.
Who rules here? Light that lamp. There. I'm hungry. Are you?
Yes, I am, rather. But then I'm always hungry.
See if there's anything left. Look on the sideboard.
There's biscuits. All sorts of biscuits.
And sherry?
Yes, but...
Well, better than nothing. Fill two glasses and bring them here to me.
Do you think you ought to, Gran?
There's no ought when you're my age. Put them on this little table. Now, sit you down beside me. You're a nice boy. I think you're a very nice boy.
You're the only one that thinks so, Gran.
I say you're a very nice boy. You've a nice face. You've the court nose. Life will never down you altogether when you have the court nose. You're not afraid of life, are you?
Yes, I suppose I am a bit.
Nonsense, I won't have it. Take it by the horns. Take it by the tail. Make it afraid of you. That's what I've done. Do you think I'd be talking to you tonight if I'd been afraid of life? Look at my nose. Look at my eyes. They look afraid of life. And my mouth when my teeth are in. That's not afraid of life either.
Perhaps I'm not so much afraid, Gran, as confused. Everything's such a muddle, except for music.
And they want to stop your playing, eh?
Yes, but they won't. Not forever.
Music. I expect you get that from your mother. She used to play on that piano.
I wish she'd lived, Gran.
Yes. No. She wasn't fit to cope with life.
I know. Like me.
Why do you say that?
I'm no good, Gran.
Nonsense. Stand up for yourself. Give as good as you get. You've got Irish blood in you. My blood. My brothers used to fight, I can tell you. Off with their jackets and at it. My father used to take them by the hair and knock their heads together. Great days. Great days.
Gran.
What? I wasn't asleep. I was thinking. I like a spell of thinking. I may seem to be asleep, but I'm wide awake.
I know, Gran. But it's not good for you to lose so much sleep. You'll be tired in the morning.
If I'm tired, I'll stop in bed. It's my family that tires me. Fuss, 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 fuss. Do you remember the night I pretended to die? How they all came running. I wanted to see what they do. But I mustn't cry wolf. They mightn't come when I really want them. You know why they fuss, Finn? They fuss because they all want my money. You're not worrying about who I'll leave my money to, are you?
No.
Ah. You aren't frightened of me, are you?
No, Gran.
That's good. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Don't be in a hurry to answer it. It's a very serious question. Who shall I leave my money to, eh?
Oh, don't ask me that, Gran. That's for you to say.
I know that. But suppose you were in my place. Who would you leave it to? Mind you, I won't have my bit of money cut up like a cake. My mind's made up on that. Now then, who's to get it, eh?
I can't possibly choose.
Don't pretend you haven't thought about it. Which one of them deserves it most?
I should say, since you asked me, there's only one person who really deserves to have it.
Who's that?
Well, Rennie.
Rennie? Ah, you say that because he's your favorite.
No, no. I was putting myself in your place, as you told me.
Your grandfather left him Jalna. Why doesn't he make it pay? I'll tell you why. Because he hasn't your grandfather's guts. They none of them have your grandfather's guts. No guts, no guts, no guts. Why did you choose me?
You'll be annoyed with me.
Out with it.
Well, Rennie's always hard up. He's brought up the lot of us. He's had Uncle Nick and Uncle Ernie living with him for years. And you've always made your home with him.
It was my home before it was his.
Oh, he loves having you. But just the same, he's at his wit's end for money sometimes.
You can speak your mind plainly when you want to, but I like it. Yes, I like it very much. I wonder what you'd do with the money if I were to leave it to you.
I shouldn't know what to do with it.
Don't say that. Of course you'd know what to do with it. Wouldn't you?
Why, it's stupendous. I'd scarcely know where to begin.
Good Lord. You'd know what to do with it, eh?
Yes. I'd send the uncles on a pleasure trip to England. Pheasant and Piers want a new car. And Rennie... Oh, well, of course, Rennie.
You'd want nothing for yourself?
Oh, yes. I'd want everything for myself.
Everything? What do you mean, everything?
I'm not free. I can't do what I want to do. I must always do what I'm told. I want to learn. To learn to bring out all the music that I feel is in me. I can't get it out through my fingers, but it's in my head. I want to study abroad. I want to practice until I can satisfy something that never has been satisfied.
Let me hear you play.
Good Lord, they'll hear me.
Suppose they do. If it wakes them up, it'll do them good.
Oh, Gran, if you only knew how I long to play. But I never get a chance. They won't let me. They sit on me and laugh at me, Rennie and the rest of them, because I can't train a dog and ride a horse. But I can do something that they can't. I can do it well, too. I know I can. Only not here. If I could only get away from them, just for a little, it needn't be for long. If I could only find myself, I think I'd do. I know I'd do something that was great. You think that's soft?
No. Where were you off to just now? Do you often prowl about at night?
Sometimes.
What do you do?
You won't tell.
Even a woman can learn to hold her tongue when she's 100.
I go to the church and play on the organ.
Play on the organ at night in an empty church? Well, church is all right when the parson and the people are out of it. Nothing flibbity-gibbet about a church then. But aren't you afraid alone there with all the dead people outside?
I'm not afraid of the dead.
They don't interfere with your music, eh? You're a queer boy, but I like you. Yes. I like you very much. Now, I want you to do something for me. Every night, when you come from the church, I want you to stop and have a chat with me. Nights very long. My best sleep is over by midnight, only catnaps after that. And I like you to play for me.
But, Grandad...
Oh, it can be something quiet. They won't hear. And it'll please me. Now, I'm going to give you a present. What shall it be?
Well, please, Gran, could it be something small that I can hide?
Hide my present? I won't have it. Stick it up. Invite the family to come and how dare you say you'll hide my present.
Very well, Gran.
I know what I'll give you. I'll give you my little Chinese goddess, Kuan Yin.
Oh, Gran, please don't. I know how fond of her you are.
She's in the cabinet. Go and fetch her.
Oh, but, Gran...
Go along. Go along. Kuan Yin. She knows a lot said Weedo. Something for you to remember me by. Ah, there she is.
You're sure you want to give her to me?
Though I generally know my own mind. Look at her. She's very wise, very deep and calm. Take her. Learn from her.
Oh, Gran, I'd much rather not.
She'll be good for you. She's not afraid of life. Let's it pass over her. Better let it pass over you.
Very well, Gran. Thank you. I'll keep her always.
I'm tired now. I think I'll go back to my bed. Play for me.
Oh, but Gran, you ought to sleep.
I'd sleep better if you play for me. Go along. And don't forget tomorrow when you come from the church. Something for me to look forward to. It's grand to have something to look forward to when you're 100.
And one.
WEAF, New York.
Our thanks, Miss Barrymore and Mr. Haggard. The Royal Desserts Hour, second act in which you may expect to encounter Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou, Irving Caesar, who is practically Betty's uncle by this time, Graciela Paraga, and a notable novelty in which are involved are Mr. McNamee, Ben Grauer, and Milton Cross of the NBC and Ansorial Brigade. Act Two rings up the curtain with my humble interpretation of the immortal Toselli's Serenade.
Like a golden dream upon my heart graven, still remains the memory of a love, alas, that lives no more. Ah, that was the vision, smiling so sweetly, that with shining light enthralled in joy our youthful days of yore. All too brief the time for me of that sweetly blessed joy. It vanished, that golden dream, and left me naught but grief. Oh, beyond is dark and sadder every day, for youth itself will soon pass away. Lamenting remains alone, yes, my tears and bitter grief of heart. Like a golden dream upon my heart graven, still remains the memory of a love, alas, that lives no more. Fool, la suavición, qual dolce sorriso che più lieto fa col suo brilla la nostra gioventù. Ma fu molto breve in me la dolcezza di quel ben suanì quel bel sogno do lasciando in me il dolor. Oh, è l'avvenire sempre più tristi di la gioventù passata sarà, rimpianto mi resta sol, sì, rimpianto amaro duol nel cammino a me non brilla più, mai più, mai più.
Notable event of the week just passed, the beginning of a beautiful friendship between Betty Lou Barry and Irving Caesar, safety songster. Betty says she would call Mr. Caesar Uncle Irving, only he's too small to be an uncle. Tommy Riggs, when questioned, admits he doesn't know what possible connection Betty can think exists between size and unclehood. What Betty thinks, he explains, is frequently a mystery to him. Enter Tommy and Betty forthwith.
If you don't use your own two eyes, its horn will start a-blowing with a hey, nonny, nonny, and a hot-cha-cha.
And may I ask, what is the meaning of those strange noises, Betty Lou?
Yes, Mr. Tommy, you may ask. I was just practicing Mr. Caesar's song.
Yes, but what about the hot-cha-cha business?
Oh, that was my own idea.
So you're thinking of dashing off a few songs of your own, I suppose.
How did you know that, Mr. Tommy?
Oh, I'm just a good guesser. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you. I've written the words for a song already.
Well, how does it go?
Like this. Spring is in the air and I haven't got a care, said the cow to the farmer, so there. Do you like that, Mr. Tommy?
Well, that's very good, Betty Lou.
I made it up all by myself and everything.
Well, that's fine. There's just one trouble with it, honey.
What's that?
Well, you haven't got the word love in it.
Well, I don't know if the cow loves the farmer.
Well, I mean that people always associate the spring of the year with love. There's an old saying, in the spring, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love.
That isn't what my granddaddy says.
No, what does your granddaddy say?
He says in the spring, a young man's fancy turns to what the girls have been thinking about all winter.
I guess your granddaddy will agree that love is what makes the world go around.
Oh, like my Aunt Agatha.
Your Aunt Agatha? What did she do?
Oh, she put a great big piece of wedding cake under her pillow.
What in the world did she do that for?
Because she said if you put the piece of wedding cake under your pillow, all your dreams will come true.
Oh, I see. Well, did you get a piece of that cake too, Betty Lou?
Oh, yes.
And did you put it under your pillow?
Well, not exactly.
Oh, what do you mean, not exactly?
I mean I ate the cake first and then put the pillow over my tummy.
Ah, dear me. And did you dream about anything?
Oh, yes, I dreamed that Mr. Valley took my Aunt Agatha to the movies.
Hmm. Well, was it a good show?
I don't know. I didn't go inside.
I see.
And then after the movies, Mr. Valley brought my Aunt Agatha 2 ice cream sodas.
2 ice cream sodas?
Yes. And then he took Aunt Agatha home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when poor Aunt Agatha was disappointed, too.
Well, just how do you mean she was disappointed?
Because just when Mr. Valley was going to kiss her goodnight...
Yes?
I woke up.
Honey, well, do you dream very often, Betty Lou?
Oh, no, only when I'm asleep. Last night I dreamed that I was lost in a great big forest just like Snow White.
And what happened?
Well, just then a great big wolf was going to grab me. And then Mr. Irving Caesar came in and sang a song, and that made a great big wolf run away like everything, too.
Well, well, now, Betty Lou, that's hardly a compliment to my singing.
Oh, hello, Mr. Caesar. And thank you an awful lot for scaring that big wolf away.
Don't mention it, Betty Lou. If he ever comes back, you just tell me.
Why?
Well, because I'm a specialist in keeping little girls from getting frightened. Now, suppose you were really lost, what would you do?
You mean with the wolves?
No, no, just lost, in the city maybe. Somewhere your mother and daddy couldn't find you. What would you do then?
Oh, I guess I'd yell like everything, too. What would you do, Mr. Caesar?
Well, now, if you listen closely, Betty Lou, I'll tell you. And if there are any wolves around, oh, they'd better look out. Remember your name and address and telephone number, too. Then if someday you lose your way, you'll know just what to do. Walk up to that kind policeman, the very first one you meet, and simply say, I've lost my way, I cannot find my street. But I know my name and address and telephone number too. Then he'll be kind and help you find the dear ones who wait for you.
Mr. Policeman?
Yes, little girl, what's the matter?
I think I'm lost. I can't find my way home, don't you?
Don't I what?
Don't you think I'm lost?
I certainly do. But if you will answer a few questions, everything will be all right.
Okay, Captain.
Good. Now, little girl, where do you live?
With my father.
And where does your father live?
With my mother.
Now, where does your mother live?
Oh, they live at home.
Well, we're getting somewhere now.
Where are we getting?
I hope you're getting home safely. Look, little girl, on which street do you live?
Oh, a great big one. You'd know it if you saw it.
Well, what do you call the street?
Oh, you mean, what is the name of the street? That's different.
Good.
Yes, because I don't know the name of the street.
Well, then, have you a telephone in your home?
Oh, yes.
What number?
What number? Oh, I know. We only have one telephone.
Yes, but what is the number of that telephone?
Oh, you mean our telephone at home?
That's it.
I thought that's what you meant. I don't remember it.
Oh, Betty Lou, listen. Answer me this. What is your name?
My name is Betty Lou.
Betty Lou what?
Betty Lou Barry.
And what is your father's name?
Mr. Barry.
Yes, yes, I know he's Mr. Barry, but what is your father's other name?
Daddy.
Don't you know his first name, darling? What does your mother call him?
Oh, I could never say that.
Well, I'm sure your daddy will be ringing up headquarters to find out if we found any Betty Lou Barrys. Yes, I guess I'll take you downtown. Your daddy will probably call the chief of police.
Oh, no, my daddy wouldn't do that.
Why not?
Because my daddy is the chief. Remember your name and address and telephone number, too. Then if someday you lose your way, you'll know just what to do. Walk up to that kind policeman, the very first.
he'll be kind and help you find the dear ones who wait for you.
Nightclub staff, working while honest men sleep, reports that a new must on every sophisticated after-dark list is a visit to the Club La Rue to hear a new Cuban singer and guitarist, Graciela Parraga. Señorita Parraga has received from her native land a unique distinction. By order of President Brew and the Cuban State Department, she is an attaché of the Cuban consulate here and official Cuban ambassadress at large to the world of music. Such weighty recommendations, however, are not allowed to subdue her gaiety in song, as witness her first number, Cachita, a rumba. To non-Cuban ears, Cachita sounds naughty, but we assure you it is entirely innocent. Roughly speaking, the lyric means, practically everybody likes to dance this dance. Señorita Parraga.
Óyeme, cachita, tengo una rumbita pa' que tú la bailes como bailo yo. Muchacha bonita, mi linda cachita, la niña sabrosa es mejor que el son. Óyeme, cachita, tengo una rumbita pa' que tú la bailes como bailo yo. Muchacha bonita, qué bonita, qué bonita, mi linda cachita, la rumba caliente es mejor que el sol. Mira que no pueden, ya te bulto la maraca, y el de los timbales ya se quiere alborotar. Se divierte así el francés y también el alemán, y se alegra el irlandés y hasta el musulmán. ¡Qué horror! Y el que tenga algún pesar, que se busque a su cachita y le diga, ven negrita, vamos a rumbear. Y el que tenga algún pesar, que se busque a su cachita y le diga, ven negrita, vamos a rumbear.
Thank you. I shall sing for you now an Afro-Cuban song. Quite a different sort, an adaptation of a voodoo chant, a supplication to the gods of the jungle. It is called Taboo. Alma de la África lejana, llena pecho de candela, alma de la África lejana, llena clavo. Año siempre la palmera, la foca, selva primitiva, de dioses misteriosos de piedra, y fue chango. Hasta la ocho de mayo, chango, hasta la ocho de mayo, tabú, tabú, tabú.
Memories of the summer of 1930, when Clifton Webb, Fred Allen, and Libby Holman appeared in Max Gordon's musical review, Three's a Crowd. Forget all your books, and Three's a Crowd. How to make love and put into action what you're thinking of. You know what to do, so why don't you do it? Forget all your books and starting to learn by giving me kisses that I will return. You know what to do, why don't you go to it? I'll admit I don't know anyone nicer, so when you give your orders, I will answer, aye, aye, sir. The look in my eyes is all that you need. You know what to do if you know how to read. Forget all your books and start in to do it. During the last few days of our California visit, we happened to hear a local broadcast that gave us ideas. For no very good reason at all, the staff announcers at station KFI and KECA in Los Angeles decided to find out which one could talk the fastest. So they held a contest on the air. The result was most interesting and amusing. The winner, whose name we unfortunately have forgotten, managed to read 470 understandable words in 1 minute. In an endeavor to find out how East compares with West, in the interest of science and to satisfy our own curiosity, we have persuaded Graham McNamee, Milton Cross, and Ben Grauer to compete here tonight for the fast-talking championship of Studio 8H, Radio City. The contest is unrehearsed. Enter the men of many words, Ben Grauer, Milton Cross, and Graham McNamee. Now, gentlemen, if you will kindly step to the center of the ring. Thank you. I should explain the rules. First, each of you will read as far as you can in 1 minute from Lewis Carroll's verse, The Walrus and the Carpenter.
Hey, Rudy, is this a private fight or can anybody get in it here, huh?
Tom, I'm afraid we haven't time for more than three contestants at one time.
Well, you mind if I sort of kibitz around the edges a little bit?
I guess it'll be all right, Tom.
You know, you never can tell. I might learn something, or if I had a sponge, I could throw it in a ring in case one of the boys choke on a polysyllable or something like that.
All right, quiet, Tom. Remember, gentlemen, diction counts as well as speed. If we can't understand the words, that counts against you. Graham, since this is your home ground, you go first. When I blow this whistle, start reading.
You
at
may
the end
blow
of a minute, I'll ring this bell. And we can see how many words. Okay?
Blow and ready, Rudy.
On your mark. Get set.
The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all its mighty, to the very best to make the billows smooth and bright. This was odd because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily because she thought the sun had got no business to be there after the day was done. It was very rude of him. She said to come and spoil the fun. The sea was wet could be, the sands were dry as dry, and couldn't not see the cloud because no cloud was in the sky. No birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking close to hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand, and if they were cleared away, they said, it would be grand. If seven mops swept it for a half a year, do you suppose the walrus said that they could get it clear? I doubt it, said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. Oh, oysters, come and walk with us. The walrus did beseech a pleasant walk, a pleasant talk along the brand new beach. We can't do more than four to give a hand to each. The eldest oyster looked at him, and never a word he said. The oldest oyster winked his eye and shook a heavy head, meaning he says that it'll choose to leave the oyster bed. The four young oysters hurried up, all eager for a treat. Their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were clean and neat, and this is odd because you know they haven't any feet. A loaf of bread, the walrus said, is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar besides are very good indeed, and now we're ready, oysters dear, and we begin to feed, but not on us, the oyster cried.
Where is that? Where were we? How many words did we have there? Let's see. All right. All
boy,
right.
He should get a week at the Roxy there, Rudy. Jimmy, for that.
Let's find out how many words there were. Well, now let's see.
I think he's spent an infinitive there someplace.
How many words,
Rudy,
did we have? Did he find a place? Well, let's see. Anyway, all right, next contestant, Milton Cross, celebrated Diction Award winner. Ready, Mr. Cross?
Ready, Rudy.
All right, on your mark, get set.
The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright, and this was odd because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily because she thought the sun had got no business to be there after the day was done. It was very rude of him, she said, to come and spoil the fun. The sea was wet could be, the sands were dry as dry. You could not see a cloud because no cloud was in the sky. The birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking close at hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand. If this were only cleared away, they said it would be grand. If seven maids with seven mops swept it for a year, do you suppose the walrus said that they could get it clear? I doubt it, said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. Oysters, come and walk with us, the walrus did beseech. A pleasant walk, a pleasant talk along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than four to give a hand to each. The eldest oyster looked at him, but never said a word. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. But four young oysters hurried up, all eager for a treat. Their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were clean and neat. And this was odd because, you know, they hadn't any feet. Four other oysters followed them, and yet another four, and thick and fast they came at last, and more and more and more, all hopping through the frothy waves and scrambling to the shore. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so, and then they rested on a rock conveniently low, and all the little oysters stood and waited in a row. The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax.
All right, all right. Sealing wax, well, that's just 364, Tom.
No, I think it was 63 there, Rudy. I don't know.
No, one less than a whole
anyhow,
year.
You know, Rudy, I think my wife could do better than that at that.
No, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. Well, now let's see. Here we have Ben Grauer. You ready, Ben?
All set, Rudy.
All right, on your mark, get set.
The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright, and this was odd because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily because she thought the sun had gotten a visit to be there after the day was done. It's very rude of him, she said, to come and spoil the fun. The sea was wet as wet could be. The sands were dry as dry. You could not see a cloud because no cloud was in the sky, and the birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking closer, and they went like anything to see such quantities of sand. This were only cleared away. They said it would be grand. If seven maids and seven mops swept it for half a year, do you suppose the walrus said that they could get it clear? I doubt it, said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. Oh, oysters, come and walk with us. The walrus did beseech a pleasant walk, a pleasant talk along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than four to give a hand to each. The eldest oyster looked at him, but never a word he said. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say did not choose to leave the oyster bed before your oysters hurried up all eager for the treat. They caused repressed their faces, watched their shoes between the knee, and this was odd because, you know, they hadn't any feet. Four other oysters followed them, and yet another four, and thick and fast they came at last, and more and more and more, all hopping through the frothy waves and scrambling to the shore. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so, then they rested on a rock conveniently low, and all the little oysters stood and waited in a row. The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings, and so either sea is boiling hot and where the pigs have wings. But wait a bit, the oysters cried, before we have a chat, and some of us are out of breath, and all of us have had no hurry, said the carpenter. They thanked them much for that. A loaf of bread, the walrus said, is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar besides. Very good meeting.
Very, very, very good. We had to rule Graham McNamee out because he skipped a whole page.
Yeah.
Milton Cross to 364, and Ben Grouse up around 437. So, ladies and gentlemen, the winner and champion of these premises, Ben Grouse.
Say a few words to the folks back home, Ben. Come up to the mic and say a few words, Ben.
Hello, Mom.
Yeah.
Hello.
If you ask your grocer to suggest an extra delicious dessert right now, the chances are he'll advise you to try it. Thursday next, April 14th, the Valley Company goes to Lowe's State for another week. At the Broadway Theater, it'll be the third practically in 1 year for us at Lowe's State Theater. We'll also, of course, next week prepare a fine show headed by Maurice Evans. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.